Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Langwin, hoping that you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, but especially the joy you feel when you share God's love with others. Yes, this is not my regular voice. I have one of those colds. It's like 3 weeks old. It comes and it goes. It's like all the symptoms are gone, and then last night it came back with a vengeance. But it always reminds me of my friend George Eisenhower, who had this real deep voice, bass voice. And he was one of the announcers for KDK television decades ago. You may not, some of you probably too young to remember that. There was a time when all of the station identifications and commercials and everything were read by station announcers. It was like a full-time job. They had like 5-6 people at one time, and George was the last one at KDKA, and I work with him on a television program. Well, nice to reminisce. But we're going to reminisce tonight too. We're going to talk about stories, columns that were in the book, and we'll explain more about that. But as we do each week, I'd like to begin a program with a story that is based on faith and form with imagination. This story is called Teachers of the Word. It's taken from a book titled Stories of Jesus, A Gospel of Faith and Imagination. Jesus and his friends sat around the fire. They felt warm and comfortable. There was no sign of the rain that Jesus knew would come in the morning. Peter, like the others, had eaten well, and now it was time to talk about what had happened that day. He said, "Master, are we not good students and followers of yours?" Jesus was surprised by his question and answered, "Yes, my friend, but surely you already know this." "But Master," Peter asked, "who will carry the message after we are all gone?" Jesus shook his head and said, My friend, many men and women listen to us and then tell others what they have heard." "But they don't tell them everything," John remarked. "That is true," Jesus said, "but each one has something different to tell. Our words shall spread all over the world the Father has created." The men sat there with wonder in their eyes. "How can this be?" they asked one another. Jesus smiled and said, Look up, what do you see?" "Darkness," one answered. "Stars," another said. And a third replied, "The moon." Jesus said, "Other people throughout the world are watching the same sky that you now see. And he scooped up a handful of dirt, a stone and a twig. He held his hand high so that they could all clearly see it from the light in the fire. Slowly the earth fell between his fingers, and then the stone, and finally the twig. He immediately scooped them up again and repeated the same procedure a second, a third, and a fourth time. They looked at one another as a large tear rolled down his cheek. There was silence. Only the crackling of the fire could be heard. He breathed a deep sigh and said, "People's minds are like this earth, this stone, and this twig. It is in the earth that a seed grows. Stones are used to build a house. Twigs are burned to start a fire and cook food." They still did not understand him, so Jesus said, "All three are necessary if the words of my Father are to remain firmly rooted in the hearts, minds, and souls of the faithful people, where they will be remembered, thought about, and shared with others." And explained, "Words need an open heart and mind where they can grow. Words need a home where their true meaning will be protected. Words reveal truths that give life. A story of faith and imagination." I need to say that our guest this evening is the one who published this book for us about 7 years ago now. And he writes in the preface of his latest book titled Soul, S-O-U-L, Soul, Seeing, Light, Love, and Forgiveness. And it's a book written by Michael Leach and friends. It is 7 years since Soul Scene first appeared with the column Christ and Cerebral Palsy. I quoted Thomas Horace, psychiatrist, who was the best spiritual teacher I ever had. Quote, "There is more to us than meets the eye. We all have the faculty to discern spiritual qualities in the world. We can see beauty. We can see integrity. We can see honesty. We can see love. We can see goodness. We can see joy. We can see peace. We can see harmony. We can see intelligence," and so forth. "None of these things has any form. None of these things can be imagined. None of these things is tangible, and yet they can be seen. What is the organ that sees these invisible things? Some people call it the soul, spirit, or consciousness. Man is a spiritual being endowed with spiritual faculties of perception." We're going to jump ahead, and our guest writes, "This book selects 56 columns from among 160. Their purpose is to open our eyes to the light that bathes life with grace, feel the love of God that beats in our hearts and never stops, and touch each other with the forgiveness that makes all things new. It is about seeing the world as a sacrament and being in the world as an instrument of grace. Soul seeing is as old and comfortable as the tunic Paul wore on his visits to the Christian communities. Quote, don't be interested in the troubles you can see now, close quote, he told them, but be interested in the things that cannot be seen. For the things you see now will soon be gone, but the things you cannot see will last forever. Close quote. He writes, what lasts forever is spiritual. Truth, love, mercy, goodness, beauty, harmony, humility, compassion, gratitude, joy, peace, and salvation. And finally, in his preface, he writes, we may not be able to go out and change the world, but we can be still and change the way we see the world. That is what makes all the difference and changes everything. Michael Leach, publisher emeritus of Orbis Books, has edited and published more than 3,000 books. Think about that. 3,000 books, and been honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Catholic Book Publishers Association. His most recent books are The Way of Kindness and The Way of Gratitude with James T. Keane and Doris Goodenough. He edits the Soul Scene column for the National Catholic Reporter. Michael Leach, welcome to Amplify.
Brian, thank you. Thank you for that great introduction. And I well remember the book we did together, and I remember that wonderful story you just told, too.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, I was thinking about this. The woman who, of course, wrote the book is Connie Ann Valenti.
Yeah.
And she and I had a column together in our Pittsburgh Catholic for 25 years, a weekly column.
Seems
like so many years ago. But let's the first story, you have 16 stories here.
That I wrote,
And they're the ones I'd like really to focus on. If for some reason you want to go somewhere else, we will go there.
We'll go wherever you want to go, wherever the Holy Spirit takes us.
Well, my Holy Spirit said you should do Michael's. So that's where I want to start. And the first one we have to do, because we need to know something about your life, and we need to know your life encompassed in your wife, Vicky. And you talk about that in a column titled, Know What Your Duty Is, Do It Without Hesitation. Tell us a little bit about what you were thinking about as you wrote this column.
Well, as I talk about what I was thinking about, I'm laying in bed right now with Vicky. We have an adjustable king-size bed, and so I've got the mattress up a little bit. We're both in PJs. I have my Soren Kierkegaard T-shirt on. She's got her T-shirt, her green one from St. Patrick's Day that says, Thank you, Mikey. And I've got an orange one somewhere that says, Thank you, Vicky. And so we're laying in bed, and I wrote a lot about Vicky. Vicky is in year 17 of having been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And everybody is, you know, really afraid of that. And I'm here to tell you there's nothing to fear. The worst part is when you learn about it and you start imagining what it's going to be like. And I can tell you, I mean, Vicky and I have been through every stage. And once it happens, you just do what you got to do. You do your duty and you move on. And I got the idea for that column from a show on TV on PBS about Leonard Cohen. You know him?
Yes, yes.
He's a fabulous singer.
Right.
He's dead now, but he was a poet. He was from Canada. He wrote a song. Well, he wrote that one wonderful anthem, Hallelujah. But in this show, he talks about this Hindu story where the general had to go to war, and he didn't want to go. He didn't want to kill anybody, and not only that, in the other army were some of his relatives and friends, and he was talking to his spiritual leader, and the spiritual leader told him, you know, you did not bring yourself to this place. This is where you are, and you have to do your duty, and he did. And the moral of the story is not go to war. The moral is your duty is on the spot where you're standing, and I take care of Vicky. You know, she doesn't speak. She's mumbling right now. She's saying, go to it, Mike. And she, you know, she can't take care of herself, can't even hold a spoon, et cetera, or walk. But the whole idea of soul seeing and the whole idea of the Vicky stories is, you know, there's a way of seeing that's got nothing to do with the brain. And there's a way of getting your vision directly from God, because we're all in God and God is in us. And she's talking. She's saying good things right now. You can hear her.
Yes.
But I'm just here to tell you that, and as far as I'm concerned, she's just the way she was when God created her. She's perfect. And the first story I wrote about Christ and cerebral palsy, there's this diner in town where we live, and on Sunday, there's a place nearby where kids with cerebral palsy and stuff like that. It's just a word, cerebral palsy. Their parents take them out to lunch, and I was there with Vicky once, and you could tell that some people were uncomfortable, and it just struck me how beautiful all these kids were, and you just wanted to go and hug them, and you realize they, too, were just as God created them. There's nothing really wrong with them. They're in God, and God's in them, and this is a temporary phenomenon, whatever, you know, our body organisms are here for. And if we can develop this faculty of seeing the way God sees, we're going to be very happy. Right, Vic? Happy, she said. Yeah. Was that bothering you,
No. It's a beautiful scene. I can visualize it. No, okay. it's a beautiful scene, especially the context of it. You had been a priest, and you write, yeah, you asked for a miracle and said, if I broke my vow to be a priest forever, I would never break this one. I would be her man in sickness and health. And did I know then, Vicky, an embodiment of intelligence would get Alzheimer's at 57?
57. She's 72 now.
And now you believe your calling is to be there with Vicky as she forgets the line in the play and becomes more and more the divine expression she really is.
Exactly, and I see it, and anybody can see it. We have that faculty, and it's just when we start thinking about things, about the way they should be or shouldn't be, that we get all messed up and unhappy. But if you go step by step and you live in the moment, you can see, as one saint said, with the same eye that God sees. Because we're in God's eye all the time. We're, you know, his reflection. So anyway, I'm not a saint. I'm not a mystic. But I'm learning to do that. And I've been in publishing for 1,000 years. And I have a lot of friends who write. And when the NCR, National Catholic Reporter, asked me to do a column, I said, let's do something different that, you know, you haven't done, or I don't think anybody has really done. And that's about telling stories that have a lesson about what's really there, a lesson that goes beyond appearances.
And we, I think, both had a friend who passed recently, Bob Lockwood.
He was a great journalist.
Who had been in the publishing business for a long time, too. But you write about how people look at Vicky and they think maybe she is broken, but you look inside and you see the light, and her light shines everywhere. A little later you write, the eye of your soul still sees all the intelligence in the universe growing inside her. What a valuable lesson for us to learn.
Yeah, and it's just there. I mean, and she glows for God. That was a saying that my shrink in the 70s, I saw a wonderful shrink in the 70s, Dr. Thomas Hora, who believed that all problems were psychological, but solutions were spiritual. And he said, our purpose in life is to glow for God. And when we do, that makes a difference. We don't change people, but God changes people. And as we embody God, which is just another way of saying that we love to be loving, and we cultivate gratitude. We're thankful for everything, and then we know joy.
I don't do that
all the time. I don't want to give the wrong impression that, you know.
Sure. Oh, no, I understand that. No. And he used to say, you write, everything, everywhere is already all right. And you remember a quote from Meister Eckhart, we are all meant to be mothers of God.
Yep.
Amplify.
We're all meant to be mothers of God and to nurture.
To nurture, okay. And so you say, I take the green bib from Vicky's neck and wipe a strawberry stain from her lips. Yeah. I love you, I say. I love you, she says. So
that's about the most words she can say. Every now and then she'll say thank you. Usually it's just syllables. She speaks in tongues. And I just say yes all the time, and that seems to be the right answer.
But I would imagine that there's a language between you that no one else exists like the two of you understand it.
I think so. And it used to be, you know, you're married, well, we'll be married 50 years in October, and you're married that long, and when things, you know, when nobody's sick, you say the same things at the same time, and you think the same thoughts at the same time, and you have the same feelings. But it's not quite like that yet, but there's just total comfort, and there's nowhere else I would really rather be.
Right. We just have about a minute and a half till our first break, but what is it that you are writing about when you write poetry is the best theology? You begin by writing, when I was in the seminary, our English teacher, Father Ignatius Burrell, introduced us to the poetry of Gerard Manley Hopkins. I'll always remember these lines from As Kingfishers Catch Fire.
Christ plays in 10,000 places, lovely in limbs, lovely in eyes, not his, for the Father, through the features of our faces.
Right.
Was that the one?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. I love Hopkins. And there's another one, too. 1 minute, that's all it'll take, Father Ron, is from Cyrano de Bergerac. This means a lot to me, and it's the theme of the book. Yes, Vic. There comes a moment to everyone when beauty stands staring into the soul with sad, sweet eyes that sicken at the sound of words. And God help those who pass that moment by. I think we all have these moments where, you know, just for a flash, just for a moment, you know, we sense beauty, goodness,
right,
harmony all around us, and everything is already all right. And those moments that we forget, they stay with us somehow, and they keep us going, and they keep us faithful, and they give us the confidence that everything is really all
right. We're going to take this break, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
CBS News Special Report.
I'm Gary Nahn. Four pages, one letter, a summary to Congress by Attorney General William Barr. Of the Mueller investigation, one conclusion: President Trump did not conspire with Russia to sway the outcome of the 2016 election. Some parts clearer than others, reports CBS's Major Garrett.
You heard it from the president. Total and complete exoneration. That's true on the question of collusion. Less clear on the question of obstruction of justice. Clearly, Robert Mueller's team struggled with that. Congressional Democrats have made it clear they want to find out why Mueller's team struggled with that question, what they knew, what they don't know, what the public has yet to hear.
Political analyst Larry Sabato says one part of the Barr letter stands out.
If Attorney General Barr quoted that line from a lengthy report from Bob Mueller, it's a significant line. And the line clearly says that exoneration was not the result of this report and probe.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Gary Nunn.
Welcome back to Amplify. Our guest this evening is Michael Leach and his wife, Vicki. And they're listening
right here.
Right next to him, they're in bed lying together, and what I'm thinking about is the title of the book that he has written. It's from a series of columns that he edits and has written himself, called Soul, S-O-U-L, Seen, for the National Catholic Reporter. And I would suggest to you, if you can just imagine the scene, Vicki has had Alzheimer's for some 15 years, that with when you see with the soul... And we were intended to be able to do that. We were created that way, that we will see or experience something new every day for the first time. I truly believe that, because I believe that God intended every day of our life to be a gift. And it may be something we've seen so often, and yet we have not explored that object of our love completely. There's always something new to learn. We were talking with Michael and about the book Soul Scene, and we were talking about poetry, and he writes in that particular column, poetry evokes what is good, beautiful, and true. It imagines the unimaginable, describes the indefinable, and unveils what our senses cannot know or our intellect figure out. Poetry is theology leaping out of the foul cabinet and into the heart. It is the word or words that stir our souls. And then Mike, you say that Jesus never wrote a poem, but his life was poetry. A poet is a poet because, like Jesus, a poet sees and what is really there. Give us a little example of that.
Oh, golly, you know, Jesus, when he first met a couple of his disciples on the beach, they said, "We heard about you, and you do great things, and what do you teach?" And Jesus said, "Come and see." Mm-hmm. And the blind man said to Jesus later, "Lord, that I may see." And the whole gospel is all about seeing what's really there, and we can cultivate that faculty just like we exercise our muscles just by being still. And asking God to see through us, for us, and to think our thoughts for us. We're usually so busy, you know, making things up and fantasizing and figuring things out and manipulating that we have nothing but static. And God is speaking to us all the time and is with us all the time. And we can see what Jesus is doing in the world. I mean, the world is good and bad, and horrible things happen all the time. Bad things happen to good people. Good people, you know, suffer. Bad people suffer. The rain falls on the just and the unjust. And But the idea is to cultivate, this is what Jesus says, to cultivate a life of gratitude and to see.
In a column titled, We Hear God, with the same ear God hears us, and you quote the Psalm 46, Be still and know that I am God, and you write that growing up Catholic, nobody taught me to listen to God. Parents and teachers taught me to talk to God.
Yeah.
The only person who suggested that prayer was listening to God was my uncle Barney, who was a Protestant.
Yeah.
In the seminary, our spiritual directors taught us about meditation and contemplation, but they never taught us to be still and experience the love of God that's here and now. How did you learn the difference?
I'm still learning it, but I have a hard time meditating because the chattering monkey is always going off. So the way I, you know, can get somewhere is just by sitting as still as I can and watching my thoughts, observing them like a witness, not judging them, not saying this is good, this is bad, just watching them. And then at some point, you know, the waves get a little stiller. And then here's what I do. I say, God, what do I need to know? What do you want me to know? And then I listen.
Yes.
And you know what I usually hear? I'm sure everybody hears something else, but I ask God sincerely, what do I need to know? And I always hear, I'm here for you.
Right.
I'm here for you. And for the first 5 years or so, I knew that meant that God is here for me no matter what. And I've got the strength to do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But then I came to realize I'm here for you also means I'm here for God.
Yes.
God is here for me. I am here for God. Jesus said, I am in you and you are in me and I am in the Father. So you are in the Father. So that everything that Jesus has, as he told us, is ours. And I think it's very important for all of us, you know, to be still and to know that I am God. And, you know, sometimes nothing will happen. Sometimes we'll ask a question, what do you want me to know? And we'll hear something, and it'll be bingo. It'll be that voice inside of us that sounds like our voice, but it's not our voice.
Right, and with deep sensitivity and beauty, you write, it's taken me a lifetime to appreciate that prayer is not about pretending to be in the past or asking about the future, but about being awake and aware in the presence of God. The most beneficial prayer is listening. God is talking to us all the time, but we're either too busy talking to God or obsessing on our own thoughts to have ears to hear God's soothing voice. I want to heal you, he says. I want to give you peace assurance. And so when I meditate now, you talk about how you meditate. If we see God with the same eye that God sees us, as the mystic Meister Eckhart says, then it must be also true, and here's the title of this column, that we hear God with the same ear God hears us.
We're made in the image and likeness of God. That means that, you know, we are an aspect of whatever God is, and God is love. And what does that mean, love? It means something that's got no condition to it. It's got no strings attached. It's not attached to any particular person. It's just this deep benevolence that runs through us and the universe. And you know, we have to cultivate being still, and it takes a lifetime, and we still don't get it right. But when we least expect it, even if we're doing nothing, you know, sometimes God just opens up our eyes for a minute, and we glimpse eternity. It's happened to everybody. You know what I would recommend for listeners who some of the stuff, you know, might be attractive and they want to get deeper into it? Get a good spiritual book. And I don't know which one you ought to get. And usually, you know, the teacher finds us. Well, maybe the book will find you. And just spend some time, you know, being still and reading from that book. And you'll be surprised, the time might come where all of a sudden one passage just makes you drop the book in your lap, and God is teaching you something, and you'll forget it, and you'll backtrack, but it'll be there for you forever.
In the column, I Could Use a Transfiguration, you speak about reading the July issue of Give Us This Day. So when you talk about a book, a little bit different than just a book, but it is a book. And I know my sister loves that too, and reads it all the time. And you write, it's a sunny morning, but my head is cloudy. I sit down and open the monthly. It's time for some inspiration. An epiphany, perhaps, a transfiguration. I could use one. Why could you use a transfiguration? We celebrate, we reflected on that gospel not very long ago.
That's right. The gospel is Jesus takes the apostles up to this big hill where Elijah the prophet once was, and the apostles are just sitting there, and all of a sudden Jesus seems to light up, and they could see, Elijah, and they could sense that, Jesus, encompasses all of love and all of goodness, and it's just a flash, it's just a minute, and they were so worried and nervous beforehand, and then once they see, everything everywhere is all right. And then, of course, they go and they get in trouble again, and Peter denies Jesus and so forth. But those moments are coming to us all the time, and I wrote that story when I was very depressed, taking care of Vicky. And, by the end of reading that daily meditation, I looked at Vicky in the bed. She just lays there like she lays here now, like Cleopatra in a, in a sarcophagus. But
oh, she laughs. Yes. Yes.
Right. Yeah. That's right. She's saying it's true. And at the end of it, she just was shining in that bed.
Right. And
let me tell you, the story about Thomas Merton, right? In Louisville?
I'm not sure. Go ahead.
Oh, this is just one of my favorite stories. Thomas Merton was a monk in the 20th century, a great saint, and wrote a lot of books. And he was at Our Lady of Gethsemane Monastery in Kentucky, and one day he had to go to Louisville to go to the dentist, and he's standing on the street, and all of a sudden the whole street just seemed to light up, and everybody seemed to be just in slow motion, and he said, how do you tell people that they're walking around shining like the sun?
Yes.
Now, that might not happen to you or to me or to anybody, but there's going to be a glimpse of the Son of God, who we all are, and daughters of God. You're going to glimpse that, and just be open to it, and be still, and ask God to think your thoughts and to see for you. And when you least expect it, you're going to have a moment of peace, a moment of joy, and it's going to make a big difference. Don't you think?
Yeah, it makes such a big difference as you reflect that you're never the same again. Peter was never the same again. Peter, James, and John were never the same again. We don't know exactly how it affected their lives.
Yeah, but now the other thing to remember, Ron, this is real important too. St. Teresa of Lisieux said, God is found among the pots and pans. So you might not have this big flash, but you can know when you're washing the pots and the pans, or adding up the numbers at work, or whatever you're doing, or just trying to keep your house in order, whatever you're doing, that God is there. And that is so important, because we live in this dream world, that's totally insane. And it's just a passing phenomenon. And what's real is God and love in us, and that's going to stay real. Right, Vic? Vic says, yeah.
But you also reflect here that transfigurations don't happen on mountains or street corners. They happen in us. And that says something about our own uniqueness and our own importance to God, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. We spend our whole life, I spent my whole life trying to protect myself from being hurt. My parents were divorced when I was 5 years old, and I never really got over that. And maybe I have now. My parents are gone and so forth. But we live a life of hurt. But Jesus said, in this life you'll have trials, you'll have tribulations, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. And, we go to church and we read the Bible and we do spiritual reading because we, need Jesus to crash through. you know, all this big illusion of what we're living in this world. And he does. He does. We just need a little willingness, just a little willingness. That's what this old guy has learned, is learning.
And in the column, marriage is two people in this thing together. You begin by saying, someone asked the comedian George Burns the secret of a successful marriage. He answered, that's easy. Marry Gracie. Well, you might say, marry Vicky. Really?
I was lucky.
Yes.
You got to be lucky. I tell the boys that. You got to find the right person, and then you got to be the right person, and your spouse has to be the right person. But you got to be lucky, and you know that's why half the marriages end up in divorce, and that's very understandable. And my Aunt Mary, the kindest, most charitable woman in the world, got divorced from her first husband, who was beating her and pushing her down the stairs when she was pregnant because he didn't want to have a baby. And he kept on beating her and the baby, and the church wouldn't give her an annulment. This is way back when, and she got divorced, and she never went to communion because the church said if you're divorced, you can't go to communion. Meanwhile, she would make pasta and soup for the poor people, for everybody. And I would say to her, Aunt Mary, go to communion. You know, it's communion is not for the saved. It's for all of us who need it. And she never really went. And I am hoping that the church will change that rule and allow divorced and remarried people to go to communion. So Pope Francis said the church is not a country club. It's a field hospital. And we all need the Eucharist. And people like Aunt Mary need to go. That's an aside. but I couldn't help it because marriage is important to me.
Right.
And so is the sacrament.
Absolutely, because it's one of your longer columns in the book. And I think it's because of you and Vicky. You don't speak a whole lot about it in Vicky, but certainly that has to be the inspiration when you write that marriage is a cosmic crapshoot. And as you just indicated, you have to be lucky enough to marry the right person. But then you must also be the right person.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage is about two people endeavoring to be the right person day in and day out. And then there's like, wow, I could read us up to the next break where you're writing about marriage is coming to know someone so well you both say the same thing at the same time. And you embellish there. You say a lot more. Then you go to marriage as being alone together and being together even when you are alone. Marriage, these are all different paragraphs. I'm just reading the first sentence. Marriage is reaching out to the poor, the lonely, and the sick because that is the nature of love, just as it is the nature of sunbeams to emanate from the sun. Marriage is choosing to have many children or two children or one children or no children at all, and I could go on and on, and you write that when they grow old, they will delight in grandchildren without wanting them to be anything other than what they are, and they will not worry when their adult children pull their hair out. Mercy, our marriage is not only about joy, but also about mercy. Marriage is two people telling the truth about themselves without fear of being accountable. I could just go on and on from this particular column.
Thank you, Ron.
Because there's so much here. The miracle is this: when you are the right person but do the wrong thing, everything still turns out all right. Marriage is a loving, long-term companionship that at its heart has little to do with sex or even gender. It's a mutual participation in the love of God. They experience suffering, sorrow, dissatisfaction, and disappointment. But remember the laughter, intimacy, comfort, and joy. They made a promise. They kept it. First, they fell in love. That was the exciting part. Then they learned to love. And then just this final sentence. Marriage is a vocation that reveals the love of God in the lives of two people who are, quote unquote, in this thing together. Beautiful. What a beautiful column.
Well,
again,
what? You know where that phrase "in this thing together" came from? It came from Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee, the married acting couple. And they said when they died, they told their kids, if one goes first, take their ashes and put it in the big urn.
Oh, yes, right.
Then when the other one dies, put their ashes in also and mingle the ashes together. And I want you to put on the front of the urn, Ossie and Ruby in this thing together.
Right. And a special urn, large enough and comfortable enough to hold both of us. So.
Yeah. That's marriage. You're in this thing together, you know, and it's hard enough to get through if you're alone. And if you meet the right person and you both be the right person, you can get in this thing, through this thing, together.
Where did the inspiration come from for writing the columns that you did?
I sit down in front of my computer. I've been writing for a million years and editing for a million years. But for this, this column means so much to me, soul seeing. I sit in front of the computer and I close my eyes and say, okay, God, keep me out of this. Help me to write something that's helpful. And I always start with something from my life, you know, a story from my life, and that's what I tell the other writers to do too, the guest columnists, something for the life, from your life, and be honest and unafraid and be vulnerable. And let the lesson come out, and the lesson will come out in the story. So that's how I write those things.
We're going to take a break now, and you'll be able to hang up, and then we will call you back. But when we come back, let's talk about the column, A Good Man Is Not Hard to Find.
Mm-hmm.
And people will begin to see that you write about just about a little bit about everything. So we're going
to
take this.
You want me to hang up the phone?
Yeah, you can hang up and we'll call you back. Okay?
Okay. Talk to you shortly.
Take this break right now. Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest this evening is Michael Leach. Let me reset the program. He is the publisher emeritus of Orbis Books, has edited and published more than 3,000 books, one of which is a book he published for us called Stories of Jesus, A Gospel, Faith, and Imagination. The stories have been telling on this program for some 30 years, more than 30 years of the 40-some we've been on. He has been honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Catholic Book Publishers Association. He edits The Soul, S-O-U-L, if you're just tuning in, Soul Scene column for the National Catholic Reporter. And our guest with him in bed, the two of them, are he and Vicky, his wife, who for 15 years has had Alzheimer's. And the first story I'd like to take, Michael, this hour is a good man is hard to find. It fits in then because...
It's not hard to find, Ron.
It's not hard to find. Yes. It's not hard to find. Thank you.
I'm not Flannery O'Connor.
Yes, because you write from the perspective of a person who has been involved in a support group for men whose wives are dementia, and you speak about a number of them and how they see their life.
Yeah. You know, you always hear a good man is hard to find, and
yes,
especially when people are young, you know, they always say all the men out there, you know, they're just not nice and stuff like that. And I just have to be fortunate. I know a lot of good men, and a lot of the good men I know are in my support group for husbands whose wives have Alzheimer's. About half these guys are widows now. We've been in this thing for, you know, about 10 years or so. And there's just such good, sweet men. And we don't get into the intimate details of our lives, but I would bet they've been faithful their whole lives. And there are people like that, and I just wanted to celebrate them. They're faithful to their wives, not just in, you know, not having affairs or anything, but, you know, getting them a cold rag for their forehead when they have a headache. And, you know, getting them dressed and undressed and cleaning them up. And that's real fidelity. And I just love these guys, and they're ordinary guys. And if you saw them in a bus or at church, you know, you wouldn't think twice. But you get to know anybody. And you get to see, number one, not only do they have problems just as big as yours, but they got hearts, you know, as big as yours. And that's all. I just wanted to celebrate those guys.
And they had some unique perspectives. Pastor Blaine spoke about caregiving as a noble, rewarding, but frustrating patience is both a virtue and a necessity. And another saw the experience as an opportunity to become wiser, more nurturing, more tender, more mature, that the enduring reward is the wisdom that comes from learning what life is really all about. And so it's and one man says, this is my purpose. This is my life. This is what I'm here for. It's what I do. I can't imagine life without her.
That's Lenny, my friend Len, who's a wonderful guy, and his wife Sabina passed away just this past year. And he's giving me Sabina's wheelchair for Vicky because they were friends. And a good guy. And that's his purpose. And when you're in a situation where somebody you love has got a handicap or needs special care, well, what that really is an opportunity, you know, for you to be loving. And it's not just loving the person. It's just the love of being loving and paying attention to what needs to be done. And you do it because if you didn't do it, nobody else would do it. And so you don't make a federal case out of it. And so all these guys, you know, I mean, see it this way. And what's that? Yeah, she likes that. And they don't complain. And they're living good lives. And I feel the same way.
And
It's okay. Things are okay.
And in the book you write, I remember Paul's story. His wife, Joan, has been in a near vegetative state for 5 years. He visits her in the nursing home every day. He once shared, quote, when I come into her room and sit at her side, I ask her, where is my kiss? And amazingly, she puckers up. Her eyes are closed. She can't talk. The only real communication is when I feed her. Her mouth opens just like a little bird.
Just like a little bird. He still tells that story, and he cries when he tells the story.
I could be moved to tears myself by some of the beauty of some of these stories.
Are good.
Not this next one, though. This next one is titled, What I Learned About Life Playing Center Field for the Cubs. Again, I should tell people these are all your stories that I've been telling you about so far. So tell us a little bit about what you learned about life.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, man, so much. I'll tell you, I grew up on Addison Street in Southport, two blocks from Cubs Park, Wrigley Field, to the rest of the world. We called it Cubs Park. And so I went to a million games. And once when I was about 17, I went with my friend Johnny Pritcher. And after the game, the Cubs had lost about 17 in a row. This was, you know, back in the 60s. And Johnny Pritcher and I went, they had batting practice after the game. They lost another one. And we asked the coach, Dutch Leonard, we had our gloves, could we go out in the field and shag some balls? And he said, no, you'll get hurt. Oh, come on, Dutch, come on. You know, you see us here all the time. And he said, okay, get out there. So this was awesome because I always dreamed I'd play center field for the Cubs. And I would make these sensational catches climbing up the vines in my glove over the center field wall. And you would practice in the alleys, you know, by jumping up to the gutter of a garage roof to catch a tennis ball. So there I go out to center field, and there's some other guys out there, and this is going to be my chance. And I'm nervous as anything. When I'm in the alley, I'm never nervous. It's just playing catch, you know, and not even thinking. You're not even there. And that's when God appears, of course. So here I am fantasizing about this catch I'm going to make. Somebody hits one to center field, and I go back, and this is going to be it. And I bump into Mo Drabowski, and the ball goes to the ground. And he yells at me, and I'm really feeling low. And I say, well, there's only one thing I can do is pick up this ball and throw it to home plate. And I pick up the ball, and I take a couple of steps. I throw it as hard as I can, and it barely rolls to second base. And the lesson of the story is when you play baseball, you're supposed to play, and you're supposed to have fun, and you're not supposed to think about, you know, how good you are and about impressing people and about having success. Ernie Banks, who was my favorite player, he played shortstop, used to say, you know, let's play too. Let's just have fun. And that life is like that, too. If we fantasize about how good we're going to do or we're worried about our success or we're not making enough money, well, we're not going to have fun at work, and we're not going to, you know, really do a good job. So the lesson I learned playing center field for the Cubs is just to play.
Yeah, Bob Lockwood and I, he loved baseball. And we often talk baseball also. He was a Mets fan, but
that's okay. I forgive
but,
him.
He became a Pirates fan, but
oh yeah, Pirates.
Right. But part of what that I picked up from the book was that legend has it that my father took me to my first Cubs game when I was a week old. So you were already at it early in your life.
That's the story that the week, you know, I was born, he had to go to the game with his buddies. He put me in a carriage. He went to the center field bleachers. He saw a nice lady. He said, "Will you watch my son?" And she, "Oh, sure, I'll be happy to." And he went down. He hung out with his guys, the bleacher bums, and that was my first game.
All right, and so you learned the love of being alive and the joy of just playing baseball.
Yeah, that was what was great, Ron, about Wrigley Field, about Cubs. It's a park. It's a park.
Yes,
you went to the park. Yes. You know, there was no roof or anything like near a roof. Yeah, the joy of playing just to play.
Forbes Field was like that here in baseball, or here in Pittsburgh.
I remember
that. I used to love going to the doubleheaders on Sunday.
Yeah.
I would walk there, you know, and especially when they were playing the Brooklyn Dodgers, because there's so many stars, you know, the Brooklyn Dodgers, you know, that come and see. And it was just, I remember that.
We used to stand in front of the streets, and people, you know, in those days, there was no parking lot for Cubs Park, and they would park on the streets and the side streets. And we, you know, we were the ragamuffin kids, dead-end kids. "Hey, mister, we'll watch your car so it won't get hurt."
Yes.
While you're at the ball game, and they would always think, "Oh, we better give this kid a nickel or a dime, or they might scratch our car." So we would get enough money to go to the games. And for the Dodgers, you know, everybody came to our neighborhood to see the Dodgers play. Carl Furillo, who played right field, gave me his bat once.
Right, the one that was cracked. Yes, it was cracked, as I recall.
Oh, did I write about that too?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Oh,
you write about it in this story. Yes.
Okay.
Christ and cerebral palsy. You start off by writing how easy it is to see the face of Christ in the eyes of a baby or the limbs of a child racing a kite or the features of a movie star. The key to eternal life is to behold the loveliness of Christ in the eyes of a child born blind, the limbs of a teenager with cerebral palsy, the features of a woman scarred with burns. The truth is, the beauty is, each wears the face of Christ, and they all play as one. Say a little bit more why you wrote this one.
I don't know, because it's true. And like I say, I sit in front of my typewriter and I say, "Dear Lord, just let me be helpful. Let me express truth and beauty and goodness and joy and love and gratitude," and then I start writing, and I write about where I am and what's going on, and then the Holy Spirit usually draws the lesson that's there, and I say, "Oh boy, I'm learning something," and then the beauty is I get to share it in this column. If somebody's interested in the column, of course, they could buy the book Soul Seeing on Amazon, but also it's in the NCR, National Academy Reporter, every issue, every 2 weeks it comes out. And if you go to ncronline.org and then search for Soul Seeing, you'll see all the columns.
Good. In this column, you use it to write about the new science of metapsychiatry.
Yeah.
That validates the teaching by demonstrating that we all have a spiritual faculty to enter a rehab room and see Christ, to help a homeless woman push her shopping cart across the street and know that the story of St. Christopher is the story of us all. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to your friend, psychiatrist Thomas Hora, who founded this science, metapsychiatry, on the teachings of Christ. And let me just read what you have. He taught here, "There is more to man than meets the eye. We all have the faculty to discern spiritual qualities in the world. We can see honesty. We can see integrity. We can see beauty. We can see love. We can see goodness. We can see joy. We can see peace. We can see harmony. We can see intelligence and so forth. None of these things has any form. None of these things can be imagined. None of these things is tangible, and yet they can be seen. What is the origin that sees these invisible things? Some people call it the soul, spirit, or consciousness. Man is a spiritual being endowed with spiritual faculties of perception. Each of us can behold the truth of being in all of us.
That's just true. And, you know, there's no secret to it, but what Thomas Hoare used to say is you have to be interested in it. You can't earn it. You don't deserve it. But if you're interested in spiritual values, if you're interested in Christ, in all of us, if you're just interested in goodness, you'll see it.
Yes. I know there will always be kindness. If you remember this one, this is a story of picking up Vicky from adult care and drive to Chipotle for takeout and park in a handicapped space, and just the response of the people to you and her.
People are always kind to us, and it's just easy. You know, I tell my beautiful little grandchildren, when you're walking down the street, don't be afraid. You know, we tell our kids to be afraid of everybody. Somebody's walking towards you, smile at them and say hello. They will always smile back. People will always smile back. They live in Atlanta, and we were at this one little area where a lot of people are, and we're sitting on a bench. And as people started to walk by our bench, we all smiled at them and said hi, and people started talking to us. And so, you know, the grandchildren who were about six are learning that if you put kindness into the world, kindness comes back to you.
Yes.
When we go to Chipotle or any place, you know, well, we used to, now I got Vicky in a wheelchair, so I wheel her.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we used to have the Mike and Vicky shuffle. We would, you know, go into a place, and she would hold me from behind with her head on my back, and we just shuffle along, you know, saying, okay, give me a little of this and a little of that. And we always got extra, and sometimes they wouldn't charge us because we were cute, I guess. But I think it's also because people are just kind. And you know, it may not happen to you because you don't get to do the Vicky shuffle, Vicky and Mike shuffle, but you'll see it happen to other people. If you're just interested in it, you'll start seeing.
Sin makes guilt, and guilt makes fear, and fear and guilt make more sin. And you're writing about forgiveness here. Life is hard, you write, and we all seek relief from the pain of being human, distractions from a low-grade fever of despair. We don't want to hurt anyone because we've been hurt. So our sins, if that's what they are mostly solitary. We fear that God will punish us, and sometimes that's the very thing that turns us away from God, doesn't it?
Yeah. God does not punish. We need to know that. At Mass, about 17 times a year, the words of this gospel appear from St. Paul, nothing can separate us from the love of God. Nothing can separate us. And somehow religion teaches us to be afraid of God because we're going to be punished for our sins. God doesn't punish. God loves. And the more we feel guilt, the more we're going to sin again in order to get rid of that guilt and have a moment of pleasure, a moment of, you know, being somewhere else. And the church has really got to emphasize that nothing can separate us from God.
Indeed, you write, God always forgives because love, with a capital L, love never blames. Mm-hmm. So never stop saying your prayers or reading spiritual books. Your mother has a higher opinion of you than you do.
Yep, God is our mother.
Yes.
Just like our own mother has a higher opinion of us, if we're lucky. God always has a higher opinion of us than ourselves. We're taught, you know, not just from religion, but from education and everything, that we're not good enough. And it's not that we need confidence. We need assurance, you know, that we are made good, and nothing can change that, not even sin.
Did you see the publication of books more as a ministry rather than a job?
Not right away. But eventually I did, because that, you know, I never meant that that would be my career, or that I'd have a big, you know, oeuvre. If I would have kept all of my books, I would have had to buy a library. And so I never did. But, yeah, I got to be a ministry because I had this opportunity, number one, to say yes to things that were good, just to say yes, and then, you know, shepherd those things along. Or I got into a position, you know, where people, you know, really good people in tune with the infinite, like Richard Rohr and Joyce Rupp, became friends, and I would give them certain...
We need to hold that thought. We need to take this break.
Oh.
Welcome back to Amplify, to the final segment of our program. We have just about 20 minutes until our program ends, a couple minutes before the hour. Our guest is Michael Leach, together with his wife, Vicki, who has Alzheimer's and has a couple things that she adds to it. And through the mystery and grace of God, we can't always be sure what's going on there. Mike would have some sense of it, but we're blessed by her presence also tonight. We're talking about his book called Soul, S-O-U-L, Seeing, Light, Love, and Forgiveness. It's based on him and his friends who participated in a column that is called Soul Seeing. There are some 56 columns in this book, and if we finish all of Michael's, which are 16, there's still going to be 40 more columns in there. So, you know, there's so much more here for you to take and reflect. It's almost like a book that can help you to see into your own life a little more deeply, and even to appreciate who you are in the eyes of God when you see yourself that way. Mike, I cut you off a little bit. You were talking about some of the authors you've had the joy of working with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very lucky. And one of the things I love about, you know, the job I've had, I'm retired now, more or less, sometimes less. But after you do it for a while and you're really interested in it, you get to know sometimes, you intuit what a certain person really needs to write. And, you know, and it might be somebody who's not famous, might be somebody who's famous. And, and to say, what about this? And they say, oh, my God, and they get all enthusiastic. And then to work with them on that process, that's a lot of fun. Doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, when they were talking about the number of books that you have published, it's incredible, more than 3,000 books, and it caused me for the first time, as I was sitting here during the break, to say, I wonder how many books I have had on this program over the 45 years that I've been doing that, and so it's probably about 2,400 books.
That's right.
So it's a bunch of them, and
that's right. I used to do 50 to 100 a year, depending on how big our company was at the time.
Right.
And yeah, you just keep it going, and you juggle, and you're thinking of three different seasons at the same time, and you don't pay attention 100% to all of the books, but you do, you know, to many. And,
sure.
I don't know. It was a good job.
No, I do some more than others, and I've told people I had for a while. It was getting so big, I could not keep it any longer. The books that touched me the most, or I thought touched my audience the most, I kept, because I wanted to keep the names of those authors before me when they write again. And
good.
So I did do it that way. But let's talk about embarrassment is a doorway to grace. And it seems like the point you're making here is the courage to be embarrassed is a doorway to grace, and it only hurts for a moment. How embarrassing to realize you're a fool. How healing to be told that, as Peter was, Peter, upon your imperfect character, I will build my church.
Yeah, the inspiration for that story was many years ago. I don't know. We were maybe married 20, 25 years at the time. We were in front of a... Baskin-Robbins, and we got ice cream, and we were standing in front of the car on a hot day, and I was just realizing that I had spent, you know, my whole life trying to get people to like me. You know, I was very good at it.
Yeah, your wife said you were, too.
Yeah, she ought to know. And
nobody does it better, she said.
Yeah, and it was very embarrassing to tell her how, you know, I was really manipulative, and I even, you know, did everything in my power to get her to love me, which I really didn't have to do. And I was almost crying, you know, telling her I'm a phony, you know, and this and that. And I was embarrassed, and that embarrassment just opened up, you know, a channel for love to flow in. And I think that it would be so wonderful. I just would wish for everybody to have somebody in their life they could be that vulnerable with, and to be embarrassed. And to be embarrassed in front of God, and God just laughs. God just yes. laughs our petty sins, you know. They're really pathetic. And we got to just have a better attitude. And to have somebody who laughs, you know, with you when you confess your sins is a great thing.
Whatever Happened to Little Miss Hagel is another title. And this was a couple years, well, more than a couple years, 3 years ago. It was in March of 2016 you wrote it. And it was Easter time and you were thinking of her.
Yeah. When I was a teenager, about 17, 18, I had an old 1946 Pontiac. And Little Miss Hagel was this little German lady who used to go to my Grandma Lou's house all the time. And she would go there, and my great-grandma was very short with her and impatient because she had dementia, and she would smell of urine. And she would always bring a little cake over, and she would always repeat herself. And I just thought Little Miss Hagel was so sweet and so good. And once I found her lost on the street, and, you know, I helped her get back to her house. And then another time, and this is the story that kicked it off, I was driving to the gym to play basketball, and I saw her. And I said, I've got to get to the gym. The game's going to start. And I went up to the gym. I passed her, and I felt so guilty. I went back, and I looked for her, and I never found her. Right. And whatever happened to Little Miss Hagel, because I'm sitting here now with Vicky, who is just like Little Miss Hagel. And so I get to take care of Vicky when I miss my opportunity to pick up Little Miss Hagel. I don't know what the lesson is except to pay attention to all the little, you know, lost ladies and just appreciate them and to help them find their way.
Well, when you write, you do end up with a kind of a lesson. You write, help me to be good and to understand the meaning of your presence in my life. Did you come to me then to prepare me for what was to come half a century later? Do you come to me now at Easter time to remind me what is important is not that Jesus rose from the dead, but why? I've been learning my whole life that he died to save us and rose to demonstrate that everything he taught us was true. And what he taught us most was to love the weakest amongst us. Thank you, Miss Hagel, for inspiring me to be faithful to my promise to Vicky, to have and to hold, to love and to cherish, in sickness as well as in health. Like the Lord himself, you departed from my sight so I might return again to my heart, and this time find you there. For you departed, and behold, like E.T., like Christ himself, you are right here.
And I'm holding Vicky's hand right now. She's sound asleep. Her mouth is open. And you never saw such a picture of peace.
Yes.
Complete peace, not a worry at all. So even when we have, you know, illnesses that strike everybody as so fearsome, there's still the capability of peace and joy.
For sure.
For sure.
Bishop Morey has a remembrance of things past is another one of yours. You seem to remember it because you're responding already.
Yeah, I love Bishop Morey.
And he was one of your classmates, and nine of you had left the priesthood a long time to marry, but not Bishop Morey, who was the bishop in Kansas. And what is it you're remembering about him?
Well, he's the bishop of Paris, Kansas, and so he can see Paris from his front porch. There is no Bishop Morey. Bishop Morey is somebody I made up once, and everybody thought he was real. So I kept on making these stories up, and I told this one story with Bishop Borey, who's kind of an alter ego for me, about we're walking around the lake at St. Mary of the Lake Seminary, and we remember, and this is based on a true story of me and another friend, we were both told by the rector of the seminary we could not be priests in Chicago, where we lived, but it was against canon law because our parents were divorced, me and Maury, and it broke our hearts because we dreamed of being priests in Chicago. Well, for Christmas vacation, I went back to my parish, and my pastor happened to be Bishop Bernard Scheel of Chicago, who started the Catholic Youth Organization, was a very wonderful man and a powerful bishop. And I told him I couldn't be a priest in Chicago. He said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, that's what Monsignor Foley told me." He said, "Wait right here." And he got on the phone and he called up Monsignor Foley at Mundelein. He said, "Don't you ever say that to that boy again. He has a wonderful mother and a wonderful father, and he's going to be a priest in Chicago." Well, that was my pastor, and I became a priest in Chicago, but my buddy Maury did not. But what happened, eventually he became the Bishop of Paris, Kansas, and he's appeared in about a dozen stories in the National Catholic Reporter, and they're always stories of grace and humor and God's providence. So I just told you a secret that nobody knows, well, everybody knows, who knows, that Bishop Maury is me.
He quoted.
You didn't know that? You didn't know that, Ron?
No, I knew there wasn't a Bishop Maury. I knew that.
Because
you tend to know the bishops throughout the country,
And
especially not a diocese, you know, Paris, Kansas. So I knew there was something more to it. But he quoted Nelson Mandela when he was leaving prison. Mandela wrote something like, "As I walked toward the gate that would give me freedom, I knew if I didn't leave my bitterness behind, I'd still be in prison. I've forgiven Monsignor Foley many times over the years for a lot of things, but still feel a burn in my gut when this one comes back up." Maury turns to me. "It's time to stop forgiving him. You've done your 70 times 7. It's time to forgive yourself for not feeling it. Nobody's perfect."
Yeah. I love that column. Thanks for reading that.
What am I praying when I pray the Our Father? That one is a little more of a teaching column.
Yeah, it is. Than the other, not so much a story.
Than the others are. Can you remember some of what it was? It was, you wrote about Pope Francis made news recently when he implied that some of the language in the Lord's Prayer needs polishing. And then you went right through the Our Father. And there's a small book out by Francis where he speaks about the Our Father, what he thinks it means, and also the Hail Mary. There's two short books out there now that have been published recently.
Mm-hmm.
But people could look at this. We just have we still have enough time to talk about it. But can you remember some of the things that you wanted people to understand when they prayed the Our Father?
Yeah, I think the one that means the most to me that I've learned over the years is "Thy will be done." Thy will be done. You finally come to the realization, you know, that when we say "Thy will be done," it's not, well, you know, I really got this crappy situation, or, you know, I don't have enough money, but "Thy will be done." I have this cancer. Well, it's horrible. "Thy will be done." No, God's will is not for us to suffer. God's will is for us to be joyful. And so when we say "Thy will be done," what we really mean is good things are going to happen when we say that. Not that we're going to have the courage. Not that we're going to be in a situation where you say, well, God only gives us enough pain, you know, that we can endure. No, God doesn't do any of that. You know, God gives us grace to endure, but he's also, you know, bringing joyful things into our life as well. And so when we say "Thy will be done," we got to be sure that we understand that good things are going to happen through God, not bad things.
Let me read what you wrote. "Thy will be done." This is my favorite line. "My soul sometimes whispers or cries it. I need to know that God's will for me is better than anything I can imagine. Love doesn't want to hurt me. God's will is to bless me, Romans 12:2. The very first sentence in the Catechism of the Catholic Church teaches, quote, God infinitely perfect and blessed in himself, in a plan of sheer goodness, freely created us to make us share in his own blessed life. Close quote. Thank you, God. I can relax now.
Yeah, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, the whole story of the Garden of Eden is that God didn't throw us out of the garden. We left. When we put the fig leaves on, God said, who told you you were naked? We left. We forgot where we really are. That's a mythic story to tell us the truth about the way we are. And we're lost, but we have this built-in GPS system, you know, back to God, which is really realizing that we're in God and we never left and God never threw us out. And that's why we make up all this other stuff, whether, you know, conflict at work or in nations overseas, just to blind us and just to forget, you know, where we really are. Is that so horrible to be in God and to be in peace and not have conflict? Well, you know, the human race seems to have come to this position where they think so. But when we say, thy will be done, thank you, God, I can relax. Thy will be done, not mine. Quit thinking about it.
The part of the prayer that I've been attracted to more than any other part, probably for about 4 or 5 years now, is, but deliver us from evil. Some people believe that the original translation was, deliver us from the evil one. And you write, I cannot save myself. I cannot save anyone. Only love can save us. I surrender my will to God's. I ask God to set me free from the destructive idea of a false self I make up in order to survive, but in fact destroys me. So I may instead dwell in the shelter of the self, capital S, that sets me free. God's will is to deliver me safely in his kingdom. And you have a lot of scripture citations within that. And part of the reason why that attraction to me is the next book that I hope to have published in a couple months with my friend Connie Ann Valenti. It's her, what she has seen about why Satan was cut from the heavens when Jesus said, see him falling like lightning from the sky. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. Why did that happen? What existed beforehand? What mm-hmm. caused that? And how did that end up? How did that lead to the creation of this world and mm-hmm. His dominion over it and so much more? So I pray that part of it, and certainly the prayer to Saint Michael, I pray a whole lot now too.
Mm-hmm.
One
That's
more.
Great.
Go ahead. No, you can sound like you were saying.
No, I look forward to that book. That sounds well. Connie is a true mystic. I mean, she's
yes.
wonderful.
Oh, she sure is. She does not like that word. She mm-hmm. doesn't want to be called that. The final.
Yeah, I know. I dig it.
The final story is everything I ever need to know about life I learned from Grandma Lou. What did you learn from Grandma Lou?
Everything that I needed to know to get through life. Everybody's should have a Grandma Lou. I'm a grandpa now, and I love it. When I was a little kid, I would go home to her house for lunch from St. Andrew's School for a peanut butter jelly sandwich or whatever she made. And after that, we'd lay on this ratty old sofa, and she'd read me a comic book. And I just loved being in her arms. She was so good, and she never judged me, and it was a safe place. And once I looked up at her when I was maybe 9 years old, and she was reading the comic, and I used my finger to push it down, and I says, Grandma Lou, you really love me, don't you? And she said, yes, I do. And when I said, you love me? And she, yes, I do, Michael. And then really, just like almost St. Peter for the third time, I said, even when I'm bad, you love me? And Grandma Lou said to me, Michael, you could cut off my arms, cut off my legs, and cut off my head and throw it all in a garbage can. and my head would still look up to you and say, I love you.
My.
Now, when I was in seminary, years later, starting to try to read the Bible all the way through, where I really stopped was the line in John, God is love, and those who live in God live in love, and God in them. And that, to me, was Grandma Lou. And to me, that's all I ever needed to know.
Yeah, I had a grandma, Mary. She was rather poor, but I would go to visit her. I was her first grandchild. Mm-hmm. And I can remember she had an ice box, the literal ice box, where the guy came and put an ice, you know,
yep,
put ice in there. And she would go, and we would buy milk each day and Rice Krispies, and she would tell me, you know, listen to the pops. Now, you know, listen to it snap, crackle, and pop. And that I drank coffee. It's the only time in my life I drank coffee. It was with my grandma. After that, I never drank it again. So, yeah.
But you had your grandma Mary. Nothing like it to have a grandparent that loves you unconditionally, right?
Absolutely. Our guest this evening has been Michael Leach and his wife, Vicki. Michael, it's been so wonderful catching up with you again, and I hope we can do something like this again in the future.
Yeah, I'm just glad you're still around, because you've got a great show, and you're a blessing.
Well, thank you. With people like you, it's easy to be blessed, because God blesses me through people like you, so thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Ron.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
It's nice to catch up with friends, you know what? We've come to the end of the show. Don't forget then how precious life is and how powerful love is. Tell someone now that you love him or her. Pray for peace as if it depended on you alone, and come back next Sunday and amplify with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.